This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q. Citizen and Friends program. I'm your host, Jason Olborn, and it is election season, that's for sure, here in Australia. Today we had the ballot draw where all the candidates from all the different electorates around the country were having their ballots put into a big lottery spinner. And the numbers came out, and therefore the order in which the candidates will appear on the Green House of Representatives ballot was drawn. And in my electorate of Paterson, there were seven candidates. And whilst my name was read out first, that was to allocate me a number. And when all those numbers were allocated, I found myself at position 7 of 7. So I'm right at the bottom of the draw, number 7. And at the top of the draw was Neil Turner from One Nation. And in the middle were the 5 ladies representing each of their political parties. And so the boys became the bookends. And this starts what has become the official season of the election. And for those who are listening to my program here over the last few weeks, we've been going around the country and interviewing candidates from all parts of the country and from all parties, particularly those of the Freedom Parties. And we're going to continue with that theme this evening on the show. And we're going to talk to Kate Mason, who is running in the seat of Robertson, which is on the lower part of the Central Coast in New South Wales. Kate represents the Informed Medical Options Party, and she is a voice to be reckoned with. And last night, she appeared in a Friends of Freedom rally, like I did, in her neck of the woods, where lots of people are coming along to see politics being played differently. The same occurred where I was, over in Maitland Park at the bowling club, where lots of people came along to hear the comments and thoughts and policies of candidates who are standing up for the first time and standing up together to represent some very, very basic policies that have been ignored by the mainstream, and for where we're seeing more and more people coming across and are realizing that they do finally have a choice. So there's a real structure to what's going on. There's an understanding that people need to accept and once and for all realize that there are more than just the Labor and Liberal parties to make a choice and a decision of who you would like to lead in your electorate and therefore around the country moving forward for the next 3 years, presumably, of the next term in office. So I'm going to welcome Kate onto the show right now. Kate, welcome. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, got you loud and clear. Thanks, Kate. How are you and how did you fare on the ballot draw today?
Hi, Jase. Thanks for having me here. So I came 9th out of 11 in Robertson.
Right, so not actually 9th in terms of results, but 9th in the order in which you will appear on that green piece of paper on voting day. Well, there you go. So it's a big field. It's certainly a big field, isn't it? Robertson, 11 candidates.
Yeah, it's a very important seat for whoever wins government to get this seat of Robertson. So there's a lot of people put their hand up for this to represent Robertson.
Okay, so just to go through that, 11 people. So if we compare it to Paterson, where we've got 7, we've obviously got Liberal, Labor and the Greens. We've also got United Australia Party, Liberal Democrats, One Nation, and we've also got the Informed Medical Options Party. I presume all those 7 parties are represented in Robertson. Can you tell us about the other 4 candidates? Are they independents or are there other parties running as well?
Look, there's one on there that I can't place where she is. I can't see her on Wikipedia. I was looking her up today and trying to work out all the tally room and unable to locate her. But we have the Animal Justice Party. We have the Citizens Party. We have the Indigenous Party, but that's not their full name. And then we have one other one that I'm just not sure where she is or if she's an independent. Can't seem to find her and locate her at the moment. So we have the top 4 Freedom parties, which, as you said, is the UAP. It's myself as the Informed Medical Options Party, One Nation and Liberal Democrats.
And then
the three
establishment parties, as we can call them that. So that's a very, very big field. And what's the sentiment at the moment around the electorate? Are you in a position where you're seeing your signs go up, your call flutes, and they're coming down? Or is there signs everywhere? How are people getting these names out there into the electorate?
Well, we have done, I haven't seen any core flutes coming down. I haven't heard that at this point in time. UAP's, of course, got a lot more core flutes up because you've got a bigger funding base. But we're getting still core flutes up at the moment. And One Nation's only just joined up in the electorate in the last few days. So that's new as well. So basically, we have a lot of the core flutes for the Labor and Liberals up and about. And I'll be getting more up in the next week for the Informed Medical Options Party. So we started up the, similar to you, bouncing off your idea with the Friends of Freedom, we started up in Robinson a month ago. So it started up with BJ, who's the UAP candidate, and she and I just had a conversation and said, let's do it. And we met for the first week at Gosford Pub with about eight people turning up. And yep. Then from there, we also got Bentley in from the Liberal Democrats for the second week, and we had about 40 turn up there. And then from there, we've sort of gone on for another couple of weeks. We just had One Nation Billy join us this week. And we had about 100 turn up last night to hear from us and a question and answer. And it was also live streamed. So we're getting the numbers up, which is fantastic. And the word's getting out there and the community is backing us. As we're coming forward, we're not coming forward individually. I mean, even though we do represent individual parties, but the beauty of it is that we all will attract different people. We, even though we all have the pro-choice policy, from there we diverge and we have different policies. And that's wonderful that you can come in and have some choices regarding who you want to vote for.
It really is, isn't it? And so we're seeing that politics is really being changed for the first time ever, whereas before you were given the illusion of choice, and that illusion was that you had Labor and Liberal to choose from. One was the party of business, one was the party of the worker, and both tried to meet in the middle somewhere to gain favour from the Australian people. Over the last 9 years, of course, we've seen three consecutive Liberal governments, so presumably the country was always favouring the side of business, and that's mainly because the Labor Party has struggled to get across their worker protections, etc., to make people feel like they're backed for whatever reason. But it also comes down to a clash of personalities and, of course, how politics is played. What we've seen, of course, over the last 15 years now in Australia since John Howard lost office after his long 11-year term is a revolving door of prime ministers, haven't we? We've seen from Kevin Rudd to Julia Gillard, back to Kevin Rudd for a month to lose that election to Tony Abbott, to Malcolm Turnbull, and then to ScoMo, who's probably been the longest serving in that period of 15 years. And it looks like that his job is up for grabs now. And then you've got Albo, who has certainly had a bit of foot-in-mouth disease over the last few weeks, and all of a sudden the triple-jabbed leader of the Labor Party catches COVID right smack bang in the middle of the campaign. It would have to be the most unfortunate campaign I've ever seen. And so we see what may come next, and it seems that the Labor Party are rallying around and all the ministers are jumping up and down to get out there and form a new Labor kind of army over the next week, where all of them are jumping to get in front of the camera and to say their little piece. And then today we see that Richard Marles gets shot down because he talks about Australia and China and defending China at a time when we have the situation in the Solomon Islands, where all of a sudden Australia's realising that, maybe we should have moved a little bit faster on that one. And so lots of us are seeing that politics is being played as the tit-for-tat gotcha moments as what's going on. But really what it's all about now is explaining policy to the people and for the people themselves to decide, are we sick and tired of the way politics is played in this country, and can we just get a better deal? Can we get an audit of the system? And why is it that the Freedom parties are so good at coming up with great policy and able to cost them in a way that we can say, well, how come we're getting such a raw deal from the major parties? And therefore, we're now seeing the next agenda, which is all about what is the real agenda behind the agenda. Why do Labor and Liberal work so in cahoots with each other? Why were they so pro the COVID mandates? Why were they so pro the lockdowns? Why was there absolutely no criticism from anyone within those parties unless they were to be isolated or mocked or ridiculed or forced to leave the party? So we have a very, very small contingent in the parliament that's happy to explain things, have a go, question, but the system behind them is adamant that no, this is the way the establishment is. And most people are starting to see through one way or another. And one way you can probably analyze how that would be the case would be those that are double vaccinated in our country, 95%, give or take on the percentage there. And those that are triple vaccinated, dropping to just 62%. That's a third of the population have rejected the third jab. And so that must be people are starting to doubt the narrative. How many vaccines does someone need in order to protect themselves against a virus? And who exactly is still taking it? And why are these mandates on, off, on, off, on, off? There's so much going on, Kate. But what was it for you that brought you into this political spectrum and made you put your hand up and say, I think I need to have a go?
So I worked in the welfare industry for a very long time, and I was a community development specialist in the last part of my career. And that's very much about, working within the community to understand what the community wants. It's about empowering communities. And I believe that 100%, that is the model that we need to be working from. And you'll hear the speak of that and the political speak around that. It's not unknown. So I worked in the welfare industry for a very long time. When the vaccine mandates and the lockdowns were happening, I was getting really concerned about the lack of discussion within the welfare industry around how this was affecting people. I mean, we work in the welfare industry, we work with the most vulnerable people in our communities. So it's women in domestic violence situations, it's children and families that are struggling, it's people affected by alcohol and other drugs, mental health issues, etc. There was no discussion. There was absolutely no discussion. It was zip around what was the effect of the lockdowns, which I found extraordinary. And when it became to the point of, I was being sort of asked, or as an expectation of my role, to work in partnership with Department of Health to how do we get our multicultural communities vaccinated, and I was very uncomfortable with that. I always felt this sense of personal responsibility that if anyone was injured and I had said anything to anyone about getting vaccinated, I would be responsible. Inside myself, I would feel responsible for that injury. I didn't feel I could do that. I wasn't confident in the vaccines and that they were conditionally approved. And I was aware that there wasn't a stringent process for that approval through the TGA, the Therapeutics Goods Association. So there were a lot of reasons. And then it came to I was watching live streaming of the Melbourne protests, and I was seeing the violence of the police and the armies being meted out on the people who had just had enough. Where else could you raise your concerns? People say you shouldn't have gone and protested. Well, where else could those people have had a voice? Because there was no way you could have a voice. And when I was watching that, I was devastated. I could not believe that I was looking at Melbourne and that was happening to our people. And then additionally, I could not believe a lot of people coming out and saying, well, they're anti-vaxxers and right-wing extremists, when I saw they weren't. And that allowed a level of violence to be meted on those people. So I was incredibly disturbed. I was disturbed by all of it. And then the constant nastiness, vitriol, get vaccinated. If you don't get vaccinated, you're selfish. And it just endlessly went on, and I just got increasingly uncomfortable. And I also, with that, set up a group called Community Services Speak Out with welfare workers, where we did write to our politicians, and we did ask the Minister for Child and Family and the Minister for Disabilities, and we said, this is what we've seen as frontline workers. How have you risk assessed the dangers of lockdowns and the implications of lockdowns on these vulnerable people compared to the risk they would have had from COVID? Where's your risk assessment for that? Because you've also created the conditions where people become more vulnerable by people losing jobs, people losing their community supports, their social supports, and other things. And we never got one single answer back. So they personally did not risk assess. There was no sense of needing to respond in any way. And at that point, I lost trust. And I was somebody that trusted the government. I wasn't somebody that was incredibly aware of lots of things going on. I just trusted and I lived my own life, and I found my way around the system when I wasn't that happy. I mean, legally, I found my way around the system. I was able to live with a sense of my own life, and that I could have choice around it. And this was where I hit the wall, where suddenly, unless you get something injected into your body, you are going to face financial ruin and become a social outcast. And that did not sit well with me, and I will not be silenced. I think we all have a right to have a voice. You may not agree with somebody else, but that's different. You can still speak. And the fact that they made it so difficult for people to talk to each other and say, well, I'm concerned about this or that. So all of that sort of basically in a nutshell, that's where I got to. And then I met Michael, who is the founder. I came over and met Angela, who's your IMOP represent candidate in your seat. I wanted to talk to her. I was reaching out just around the place to see where can I move to next, what can I do. And I came over and then I heard Michael speak and I just thought, I really like the party. The party sits really well with me with the policies around planet pollution and non-GMO food and no jab, no pay, play legislation, removing that and many other things around democracy. So that's pretty much where I decided I've just got to do every single thing I can do, coupled with the fact that my daughter is pregnant and I'm going to be a grandma for the first time. And in the mix of such delight is such distress because this world is absolutely crazy and not one and one that I feel very concerned about a baby being in. So I'm wanting to do everything I can to protect the children.
Well said, Kate. And it's something that's a real sentiment amongst many candidates who have decided to put their hands up to literally work for free. Some people, you know, as long as 6, even 9 months into this campaign, working for free. I don't know if people understand how that actually works, but you put up your own time, you put up your own money. Some people go out there and raise money. Other people just fund their own campaigns themselves because they don't have enough time to go out there and do that. And also it provides for a good reasoning that if you do fund your own campaign, it means that you're not beholden to anyone who donates money to your campaign. So these are all absolute examples of what people in independent politics, for to give it yet another name, are working on, working within the party structure to be able to show how genuine they really are. And for anyone listening would realize that what Kate's talked about are the most genuine, heartfelt issues that would have anyone want to stand up as an Australian to fight against a system. Now, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about the idea of what the government did in the past. We're going to look at the reasons why that worked the way it did around the world, and we're going to point to what is the people above the people that are in charge and to question how that all comes together and pose the question, why do some of us see it and some of us refuse to see it? Don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I've got to tell you that, you know, that terrible, terrible story. And I mean, it was taken from Crikey, I mean, which is a piece of garbage anyway. But could you just illuminate us on the, because you've had a look at the story. Tell us about, you know, the essence of the story and how wrong they are.
Well, for a start, Aussie Helping Hands was set up by three individuals who he named in the story, one being Dave O'Neagues and Haley and Dottie.
Who?
They said that, I forget Dottie's last name, that's terrible, but it's in the article. She's involved in a couple of other things. They contacted me when they knew that I was working in Corakai. And when we started talking about what the plight there, our social media followers all flocked to Corakai to support, which they do, the Hoodies Helpers people.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
In this day and age, everybody deserves the right to access phone and internet services. Whether you're from regional, rural or remote Australia, the Regional Tech Hub can independently assist with providing advice on connectivity options in your local area, or work with you and your service provider to resolve outstanding issues with phone and internet. And our service is absolutely free. Find out more by visiting regionaltechhub.org.au or by calling 1300 081 029. RTH is an initiative of the Australian Government delivered by the NFF.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you.
There's something for you at the men's shed.
Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q's Citizen and Friends program. I have Kate Mason with me on the show today. She's running for the seat of Robertson for the Informed Medical Options Party. And before the break, we were talking about what her motivations were to get and become a political candidate for the first time, as many people are standing up this time. And it's such a brilliant time in our history to realize just how many people are standing up. And you only do this when you're forced to, or that circumstances make the case. And the more people that do it, you arrive at what they call in politics as a juggernaut. And one thing you can't stop in politics is said juggernaut, and just the amount of candidates putting their hands up and the amount of parties that are out there, the freedom parties that are presenting a list of common similarities, but many, many specialties as well, is testimony to exactly what has been going on and been neglected by the government and the opposition, it seems, over the last 2 years. And for me, it all started with the handling of this virus, COVID, that is, of course, the most popular virus in all of history in terms of how much press and media and hours of time we all speak about this subject, and how we never seem to get to the bottom of it. And no matter what happens, no one ever seems to change the narrative for the mainstream to go, you know what, maybe we did get this wrong. And of course, they can't, because they're purely invested in this. And this is where it comes to this great big line in the sand, whereby we have to recognize that there must be something higher up. What I couldn't understand were some of the pointers at the beginning of this in early 2020, were the idea that all of a sudden these governments around the world all had a very similar idea. We lock down, we isolate, we wash our hands, we have no other way of dealing with this virus. We don't talk about immune boosting, all ads on TV for Echinacea and all these other great products that were sold every 5 minutes on those Let's Talk commercials. This is the latest thing that's come out. Let's go and buy this. All of those were off air. But strangely enough, you could go to get your fast food through the drive-thru. You could go to the Bottle-O and pick up your bottle of wine. You could go to one of the major shopping centres and pick up some puzzles, some toys, some movies, or whatever it was that you're going to occupy yourself with. All that was fine. But what you couldn't do was engage in your local businesses. You couldn't go to restaurants. It was around the world, as everyone remembers. But this was 2 years ago. So what sparked me up, of course, that unlike other people, I immediately turned the news off and only watched it a little bit of the time and started doing my own research. And very quickly, I realized that some very, very clever people out there, doctors and PhDs and scientists, epidemiologists, were coming up with an alternate narrative. And one of them was from Dr. Shiva way back in about March of 2020, when he talked about what became known as a Barrington Declaration, which was basically saying, we realize that those people who are fit and healthy don't need to be isolated and get out there. And he pointed to the fact that there was a very, very low fate mortality rate there, somewhere about 2-3% of the population were actually succumbing at that stage. So I started looking at the health statistics on health.gov.au here in Australia and realized that he was right. The survival rate was 97.3% across all age groups in Australia before the vaccine, before there was any treatments that were even talked about, and there still aren't any treatments you're legally allowed to talk about in Australia. They're still forgotten, even though they've unbanned a few of them in Queensland. Hydroxychloroquine is now able to be used, but has been banned for a long time. And even punishable with, if a doctor were to prescribe it, with prison, would you believe, in Queensland. That's how serious they got about not giving you a drug that may cause diarrhea, but you know, if you don't take the vaccine, you'll die from the virus. That's what we were told. So you start to see these anomalies happening, and you realize that there's got to be more to this. Why is everyone acting in unison? And the virus was nowhere near as bad as it was portrayed, and yet people still realize that it was so bad. Yesterday, Kate, 13 people died in Australia from the virus, and a closer look at the statistics showed that 12 of the 13 people that died, and all of them were well into their 70s or older, had been vaccinated. So 92% of the deaths yesterday were amongst vaccinated people. Get this, one person had been vaccinated four times, 10 people had been vaccinated three times, one person had been vaccinated twice, and just one person was not vaccinated. So if you were to put that into the entire population of 95%, if you're going to match it up, then the vaccinated are dying at the same rate as the unvaccinated in this example. And so it doesn't really prove that it's have any effect at all. It doesn't stop transmission, we agree. Channel 9 said that. It doesn't stop infection. Channel 9 also said that. And based on the numbers, it doesn't stop you dying from it at any greater rate at all. And so it prompted me to go and do an investigation, which I do on my video news show, World Series News, and I've been following these stats for some time now. And I went back to the well and decided to test between Australia and Nigeria, which is a really interesting subject. Australia, 26 million people. Nigeria, 215 million people. Australia, $53,000 annual GDP per capita. US and Nigeria, $3,000 US per capita. So they're 17 times poorer than us. They're 8 times more populous than us. And it seems like a pretty weighted thing. Australia, 95% double jabbed. Nigeria, 4% double jabbed. So this is pretty obvious that Australia is going to outperform Nigeria at every metric. Only they haven't. The death rate in Australia and Nigeria pre-Omicron was roughly around the same, with about 2,500 deaths in each country. Australia probably a little bit lower. But when Omicron hit in around about December, and Australia then was let out in New South Wales at least at 95% double jab targets, Australian infections went through the roof. We went from something like 250,000 infections at that point and have jumped up to today well over 5.5 million infections 5 months later. Only in Nigeria, there's still only around 300,000 infections. Australian deaths went from around 2,000, as I said, 2,500 back then, are now up to 6,800 and something, and Nigeria are 3,143. In the last month, Australia was ranked seventh in terms of infections around the world, and we had 1.5 million infections in the last 28 days, and Nigeria had 647 infections from COVID. Australia had 1,866 deaths over the last 2 months, and Nigeria had one. One person has died from COVID in Nigeria in the last 2 months, despite being 17 times poorer than Australia, 8 times more populous, and just 4% vaccinated. Kate, have we been sold a dud?
It looks that way. There's a lot of things that don't add up, isn't there? And then there is a lot of, I mean, the fact that you now, I pretty much know nearly everyone that I know has had COVID, either vaccinated or not vaccinated, and that's become quite known. It's public. Hazard's had it. The Prime Minister's had it. And we've now got the opposition leader with COVID, yet the rhetoric is still get vaccinated to protect your community. And that's what I find that incredibly, I just cannot, there's no rhyme or reason to why that argument is still being put out there as the reason why everyone should be vaccinated.
Yeah, it has no merit whatsoever. If it doesn't stop infection, transmission, and at 95% double jab, you haven't reached herd immunity. This thing is an absolute failure on every other metric that you could possibly measure what this vaccine is. And then you load into this whole...
Sorry. The other thing that concerns me now that I see in the media is that, you know, the sort of rhetoric or the storyline that someone's double or triple vaccinated and then they get COVID and they get really sick. And then it's just attributed to getting COVID. And there is no discussion around, well, what's the potential on your body of having four rounds of spike proteins being introduced in one way or another into your body over potentially what it could be 9 months, maybe anywhere from 6 months to 9 months that could be happening. And what is happening to people's bodies in response to that? There is no discussion. So where somebody is getting ill with COVID and they are triple vaccinated, they don't seem to be making any links or studying it.
Yes, and this is a real concern, isn't it? Because this spike protein is technically a synthetic. It's almost like a 3D printing of what looks like the actual COVID virus to force your body to create an antibody, like almost like a lock and key. And therefore, that's what they're designed to do. And what bugs me about it more than anything is when you see blatant evidence put out there, such as Albert Bourla from the Pfizer, the CEO, coming out in the early days of Omicron saying, well, this is a mutation of the spike protein. In other words, it's changed shape. So if you're taking this vaccine, you're actually creating an antibody that doesn't fit the lock. And no one wants to talk about it in the media. The politicians look the other way and the health officers are just like, well, you can't even ask the question. Where are the journalists in all of this? And one wonders if it is because everyone is so deeply invested now that they must believe this at all costs, and therefore that you can't get this possibly out there. We have to keep going and going and going and going. But it makes you wonder, therefore, that if we are doing this, where is the order coming from that we all got into this in the first place? And so what is the point of it, and who is actually in charge? And what I really love about IMOP is that you guys are taking this on, and you've talked about decoupling from the World Health Organization. And I want to ask you, can you explain that a little bit more for people who are listening, going, what's the World Health Organization got to do with Australian politics?
So the World Health Organization is an arm of the United Nations. Australia was one of the first countries to become a member country of the United Nations. I've just done a deep dive, so I'm not somebody who's been really familiar for a very long time. There's a huge amount of links to, you know, get clear on. But the parts that I am really clear on is that its second highest funder is Bill Gates, who profits from the vaccine industry. He's also got Gavi in there, so he funds the WHO from his Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but it's also from Gavi, which they Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is a member on the Gavi board, and they also heavily fund Gavi. So I believe intrinsically there's conflicts of interest on that part of it. Now, so and then you go back to the United Nations. There's also a global body called the World Economic Forum. In 2019, the United Nations and the World Economic Forum signed a strategic alliance, I think they call it, a strategic alliance, that they're going to work together for the United Nations 2030 goals. So it comes down to starting to unpack who they are. The World Health Organization is where we are getting our advice from. Regarding what we need to be doing with the pandemic. So I can't remember the language that they use of, what they first called it. Do you know off the top of your head what the language they said about the pandemic or when they called it? But they called it, and then from there they've said what basic countries need to do.
Yes.
And they're in the... Right now, they're in the midst of expanding their pandemic treaty. There's 194 member countries signed up to the World Health Organization, of which Australia is one. And out of those 194 member nations, they have all said, yes, we need to have stronger pandemic responses, and we need to strengthen up and create a pandemic treaty. So that's going to be in draft form in August this year. And that's of considerable worry for a lot of us, from Dr. Tess Laurie talking about it and from things I've been reading, some of the concerns are that the WHO will be able to call the pandemic, name the pandemic, say what we need to do in terms of mandatory vaccinations and lockdowns around the world. They'll also, it's legally binding, so I'm not exactly 100% sure what that's going to look like, but people are very concerned about what that will mean for our own constitution and our own legal rights within Australia. And they will also be able to choose the treatment process. They'll be able to test the treatment, and then that's what will be rolled out to the world. It's going to be very quick. And it will be based on what they call, they've set up, what do they call it, hubs. They call it pandemic hubs, I think. They're setting up that where they will be able to work on all of this, and it's called streamlining, equity, vaccinating the world. It's just one model of global health, and that's what they call it, and that's what they're looking for, that the whole world is under this one global health model. So that's basically what we're under, and that's what I've realised. So we're not actually working through our own political systems or our own politicians making choices. This is coming straight from the World Health Organization. Now, additionally, there's concerns about the World Health Organization. As I said, well, they've formed an alliance with the World Economic Forum, and that's about 400 corporations behind the World Health Economic Forum. So that has particular concerns as well. It's also headed up by Tedros, the Director General of the World Health Organization, and he's been accused of covering up three cholera epidemics in Ethiopia when he was health minister there. And journalists have said about him that he was one of the top three members of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, and that party is ultimately responsible for all of the corruption, killings, torture, mass detention, land grab, or displacement in the country. And additionally, in 2017, Tedros appointed Mugabe, Robert Mugabe, as the WHO Goodwill Ambassador, who he's been, Amnesty International said about Mugabe, he inflicted lasting damage upon his people and its reputation. So there's a lot of very strange, I don't know, bedfellows, I would say, in the WHO and the United Nations and the World Economic Forum and digital, and there's more of these global corporate structures that are governing behind the scenes.
And so this is a very, very thorough look into all the details behind who is controlling the WHO, if we can joke about it in language terms there. But what we're seeing is that we haven't even found the cause of COVID yet. We've had five plausible origins of COVID develop now around the world. We've seen them, or we can discuss them after the break. And we can also talk about the way that we haven't got the solution anywhere near sorted as well. And yet we're trying to automatically have signatories sign up to the WHO for pandemic preparedness in the future, going around the Australian Constitution and constitution seemingly of 193 other countries around the world into the hands of those that are controlled by private corporations or foundations, which is how you control your tax burden structure, with people like Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, and Tedros, Dr. Tedros, who's not actually an MD at all, he's a PhD, and he wrote his paper on dirty water in the northern part of Ethiopia, only to have three cholera outbreaks occur in that country. And cholera is characterized by acute watery diarrhea that without diagnosis can result in death. And when asked what happened, he said, well, it was acute watery diarrhea and testing was difficult. So that's how you get around it, as simple as that, and you get through it. And he got a promotion to the finance minister in 2016. He then borrowed $13 billion from China to set up the Belt and Road Initiative in Ethiopia, and 2017 he was appointed Director General of the World Health Organization. So if anyone's listening and realizes that maybe we need to look a little bit deeper before we vote this election, this would be a really good place to start. In the meantime, don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts is warning that her party is headed towards big losses in the midterm elections unless they accomplish more of their policy objectives in the months ahead. In her New York Times opinion piece on the 18th of April, Senator Warren penned some ideas to save the Democratic Party from electoral defeat in November. She stated, quote, "Time is running short. We need to finalise a budget reconciliation deal, making giant corporations pay their share to fund vital investments in combating climate change and lowering costs for families." Unquote. On the 11th of April, Senator Warren tweeted celebrating the rollout of electric school buses in Boston, claiming that more such investments are critical to fight climate change. The tragedy is that so-called progressives combating climate change are destroying the economy and forcing more people into poverty. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Hi, Gemma Simon here from the Newcastle Jets for RAD. Playing any sport means setting the right example. And it's not just about how players focus and behave when they're on the field. It's also about their actions and behaviours off it. That includes things like drink driving, drug driving, and driver distractions. No one can perform properly if they're under the influence or distracted. So make sure you make the right decisions when it comes to getting behind the wheel of a car, and you'll definitely earn respect for it.
A message from RAD.
G'day, Bob's Removals.
Oh, hi. I have a TV I'd like to move.
Just a TV?
Yes.
Where to?
Over near the window.
Right.
You wouldn't call a removalist just to shift your telly, would you? So why call an ambulance when it's not really needed, and your doctor, pharmacist or 13 Health could help? Remember, only call 000 for an ambulance if you believe it's life-threatening, critical or serious. Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane.
When you need to know what's going on around the world and at home, keep it on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the, excuse me, the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program, and we're talking to Kate Mason from the IMOP Party, Informed Medical Options Party, running out of the seat of Robertson in the central coast of New South Wales. And before the break, we were talking about the deep ties that the countries of the world, including Australia, have with these global organisations that are not yet government, but are certainly forming into what looks to like what we always were warned about was the one world government that we've seen in novels such as Brave New World, 1984, and many other new videos that are predictively programmed to us on platforms such as good old Netflix. And so from there, we then realized that how is this actually working? And through our communications through the internet, which is like the omnipresence of all information, we then get involved with websites such as Facebook. And I tell you what, I've been subject to being hunted down by these people over many, many years now and being attacked for information that I put up that's not necessarily wrong. It just goes against the official narrative. And many of those articles, there is certainly plenty of evidence to prove that I was right, but there is no right of appeal on Facebook. And I realized, Kate, that by playing a very straight bat, it doesn't always keep you safe, and you've had an experience with the Facebook jailer himself recently.
I have. So I thought, I made the assumption that I would be able to share on my IMOP Facebook page the video. So Malcolm Roberts from One Nation did a COVID under question, a cross-party inquiry, and he had interviews with a number of people on there, and present were three MPs and three senators listening to the people talking. So I basically, there's one where it's a mother talking about the death of her daughter after the Pfizer injection, and I posted that video on my IMOP page, and I also just, all I did was copied some of her testimonial and put it above into the text above the video, into the post. So I pretty much fairly quickly got a response back, which I haven't actually done. I haven't had a response back from Facebook prior to that, but I got something back that said, look, we understand mistakes happen, so we didn't restrict your account, but your post didn't follow our standards. Your post repeats false information about COVID that goes against our community standards. So they took it off, of course. So I found that reprehensible, and I took a photo of that warning, and I had my original post underneath it, and I put it on my personal Facebook. And I just basically said, I shared an interview conducted by three Australian senators and three MPs hearing from a mother whose child passed away after a Pfizer shot, and I am warned, and the post is deleted. So pretty much immediately I was banned from Facebook, and I couldn't post or comment for 24 hours because I didn't follow their community standards, and I went against their standards as misinformation that could cause physical harm. So only I can only see that warning on there. And it said, if I think they've made a mistake, I can disagree with the decision. I also couldn't post in a group for 2 days. My posts will be moved lower in the newsfeed for 29 days. And then again, on the same time for the same thing, I also got your posts will now be moved lower for at least 90 days. And when I went and looked at their policies, basically it just says, we want to make sure our policies help to protect people from harmful content and new types of abuse related to COVID-19 and vaccines. And we remove misinformation during public health emergencies when the public health authorities conclude that the information is false and likely directly contribute to the risk of imminent physical harm. And they say that happens by contributing to the risk that people refuse an associated vaccine. So at this point, I wanted to go, and it's much more, it's huge there, what you can read there. But then from there, I went to try and have a review, where you have to click on the review, and it tells you in that review to go to the World Health Organization for reliable information. And then when I click on I want a review, it just says we usually offer the chance to request a review and follow up if we got the decision wrong. But due to COVID, we have fewer reviewers available, and therefore we may not be able to follow up. So from there, you've got no recourse, because the next step, you actually need to have a reference number that they give you from the review. So if you don't have the reference number from this review, that they're not going to do because everyone's down sick with COVID or something's happened to all the reviewers, you can't take it any further. So that's where I got to. So I am shadow banned for 3 months, and I am running for federal election.
Yeah, welcome to the club, Kate. I'm also on a series of these bans. Not only did they say your post will be lower in the feed for 1 month, they then applied the three-month ongoing ban at the same time. So there's two shadow bans on my account at the moment for what was, I call, the most preposterous set of circumstances. I had three particular incidents. The first one was I shared a video that Bill Gates came out himself, the funder of the fact checkers through his various different institutes. And it was a video that he said that sadly, and many people will remember this who are listening, sadly, Omicron has outperformed the vaccine with more people getting it and then creating natural immunity. I shared that video, and about a week later, I received a 24-hour ban for sharing something that goes against the community standards. So here we are in a situation where it's kind of like entrapment. You've got Gates paying people to create these so-called fact checkers, which have been tested in court, and the fact checkers were only saying that it was an opinion, so that they weren't therefore accountable. But those opinions have costs, and those costs are censorship on free speech using a platform. And so they used that to give me the first ban. The second one was a week later or so, when the war broke out between Russia and Ukraine, and COVID suddenly was off the agenda. It had completely left the front page of the news. And so I decided to have a little bit of a joke, a bit of satire, because it's very, very tense. Put up a picture of Putin with his finger in the air, and I said, finally, the MSM releases its cure for COVID. And it was a picture of Putin. And of course, that attracted yet another ban, this time for going against community standards once again. And so I don't know what what was going to cause harm. Was somebody going to go out and buy a Putin finger pill to help them out with COVID? And then, of course, the next thing that came along was probably the most ridiculous, was that when I asked shared a post of someone else way back in November of last year about all these athletes succumbing and getting sick and having heart attacks, I asked the question made the statement, all these athletes are falling, unprecedented in history. It's all I said, full stop. And I was given yet another breach of community standards, this time for breaches against cybersecurity. And so when I clicked on cybersecurity, it said that for people who are trying to steal people's passwords or phishing or those types of ideas. So clearly that was a mistake. I clicked on that to appeal the decision, and was taken to the same page that because of COVID, there are less people around. Now, what really irks me about that is the blatant lying that Facebook would do, not only to make a trumped up charge, but to then say that due to COVID, there are less people around. What, Facebook can't work from home? Like, Facebook's not the richest IT company in history and can't actually support people throughout COVID, despite paying very little tax and being worth hundreds of billions of dollars, that they can't afford an extra few people to help out. I mean, it's just unbelievable that we even think like this and that we would give that a free kick. But it just shows you the level of tyranny that's involved. And it's absolutely infuriating that we're here now. And as you said, in an election. Now, something to bring up about that is that I have run in the past as a Senate candidate for the Hemp Party, as it was called back then. And I remember buying some time on Facebook in that campaign. And we'd made some videos, and it was very easy to get 5,000 views on a video by sponsoring them. But I'll tell you, this time around, it's taken me a week to get any ads up on Facebook. You're paying the same amount of money, and you're lucky to get 10 or 20 likes now on a post. And a video, you're looking at $3 to $5 per click just to get anyone to watch it on a sponsored ad. So it's virtually useless to even use to try and promote that stuff. And when you're shadow banned, you sit at the bottom of the pile and no one gets to see it. So you have to basically use guerrilla tactics just to get your information out there into the open, to just make people aware of what you've got to say. And of course, the mainstream follows that whole idea. Well, if you can't see it, it's your fault. Obviously, you're talking nonsense. And this is the point. So it comes back down to that whole globalist thing, that we are in the midst of a war here. And that's where I was asking you early on in the interview, was about how you're going with your corflutes. Because up here where we are in Maitland, they are being pulled down quicker than you can put them up. And it's the council going around doing them. And it's the council who was the one that had his signs everywhere, the new mayor, and he had his trailers parked on the main drag. You can't park a trailer anymore. You can't park your car anywhere with signs on it. You can't put signs up anywhere. The media won't talk to you unless it's a gotcha story. No one's interested in hearing what you've got to say. And now social media shadow bans and their advertising's useless. So this is really done purely at a grassroots level. It's why Friends of Freedom's becoming as popular as it is, and that's working through the background, and people are truly waking up for it. So we are in a very, very interesting time, no different to what we saw in the United States in terms of the sentiment between the mainstream and the people. And I guess it comes down to a very simple thing, that the powers that be have got to a situation now that they believe that they rule over us as opposed to govern for us. And no longer can we go to the government and say, listen, this is what we want. The government's like, we don't care what you want. You'll just do what we tell you to do. And people like Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates, who don't exactly like the people. And Bill Gates, when he says a dollar invested in vaccines returns 20, like he forgot that he's talking to the general public and not to a shareholders meeting. I want to know who died and made Klaus Schwab king of Earth Incorporated. And who said that Bill Gates gets to be the doctor that controls the world? Kate, we've got only a couple of minutes, 5 minutes left in the show. I know this is a big bugbear for all of us, but where do you want to go from here? What is the good part of what you're doing that's going to make differences for the people and get this country back on track?
Okay, so we do have, I suggest everyone goes to our IMOP page and has a look at our policies, because we've got a lot of different policies and, of course, don't have enough time to talk through them. But we do have remove our ties with the World Health Organization and also investigate any negative legislative effects from our membership of the United Nations. And I think that speaks to the core of what we need to get a handle on. So IMOP and where we stand is we don't agree that rich millionaires and global organizations can make decisions for the whole world. We don't agree that those who profit can make the decisions. That's a conflict of interest, and they should not be able to be affecting ourselves, our families, and our communities. And we do not agree with global one-size-fits-all models, which dictate to Australian people what we must do to keep a roof over our own heads. So we stand instead for truth, transparency, and accountability in government. And that's what we stand for. And that's what we're asking for from our political leaders, that they stand for us and our communities and our families. And that they, I believe, and what I have seen is that we've had a corporate coup, and that they're no longer serving us. They are serving corporations, global corporations. And that's essentially disturbing. And also, I think, very dangerous. So I'm a community development specialist my whole career, and my whole work was about empowering people and supporting people and empowering communities, which is what we're doing through the Friends of Freedom. We need to do this together. It's not even just a case of a few freedom parties, and we've got a few freedom, we don't have more than a few, we've got a lot of freedom leaders. We are doing this together. We're doing this for our communities and with our communities. We're not doing it because we are egocentric and we want our particular party per se to be the one party, or for me to be the one person. It's not about that. It's about us all working together and building the momentum. The beauty of the last 2 years, and I love to hear when people say it who have been more aware of what's going on around the world for longer than I have, is that finally people are waking up. And I love to hear that, because for me, coming in and only starting to realise in the last 6 months, it's incredibly overwhelming at times. So to hear that actually more and more people are waking up and starting to say no, and that is not how we want our life to be. We do not want to be dictated to. We don't trust you. Where have we been asked? Where are we even to try and find out what's happening? We have to become like super detectives. It's not appropriate. They are serving us. They work for us. We pay them.
You couldn't have said it any better. That's exactly the problem, isn't it? That we can no longer rely on the system to be that fourth wall, so to speak, that fourth estate being the media. They've let us down. It's the reason why the rise of citizen journalism. Obviously, the internet has helped us out in that regard. However, it's become quite complicated when the platforms in which you get to perform citizen journalism, where you can put that out there, are actively going against you and censoring. So this really is a war of information. It's a war of spirituality, and it's a definition here that's defined pretty much between, as I like to talk about, it's the woke versus the awake, globalism versus freedom. And even if you really want to go down that path, it's a spiritual war between the good and the bad of spirituality, with poor old atheism in the middle kind of being the gatekeeper for the bad guys. And each way you look at it, I've said all along, it feels like it's 70-30 to the establishment versus the independent thinkers. And that was reflected this week when we saw that 35-36 Labour Liberal versus 29% they were saying to us in relation to the so-called freedom parties, or the ones that are going to go and vote against. I think that's terrific, as over this weekend, all the how to vote cards will be prepared, and that will probably prevent, in many cases, Labor and Liberal preferencing each other before the freedom parties. And I'll tell you what, when you look at the fact that 61-62% of the population took the triple jab, that's 38% that haven't. That indicates to me a very, very realistic number of the people that will vote against the establishment as a bottom line. And 38% means that a minority government is going to certainly be on the table, and who knows, it could even be a bigger miracle than all of that. We've run out of time, Kate. Thank you very, very much for being on the show today. I would love to have you back before the election to find out how things are progressing and find out more about the policies. You've been absolutely wonderful. I wish you so well in the campaign. This has been a great, great show. Have a great weekend, and Anzac Day on Monday, everyone. You're listening to TNT Radio.